How's everybody doing? We out here on a Sunday night, man. Woo! Praise God. Sometimes we need to get out on a Sunday night. Especially after football season's over, huh? You know, this song reminded me, it says that he finds us wherever we're at. And I remember there was a day in my life where he found me. I was in the low, I was in the pit. I was in the low of lows. I couldn't get any lower. Turn what up? All right, y'all hear me now? Testing. You might want to mute it for a minute. Yeah, I think we're good now, huh? Yeah? What about now?
Yeah.
All right, I can hear myself too. Knew something was wrong there. But that song reminded me of that, you know, whenever I was the lowest state of my life, whenever I needed the Father, he knew, he said, I knew where you were at. I know all of us in here could remember that. And if not, during this message, the message should remind you that. Because this story of Esther is about revival. That's what it's about. It's the story of Esther is powerful. It's a powerful book. But it's about revival. It's the festival called Purim. And the book itself is called the Megillah. It's called the Megillah. The word Purim is a Persian name. It means lot. In this story, Haman had lots cast. Haman had lots cast from day to day and from month to month in order to ensure the success of his scheme. Haman seems to have gone through the process of testing each day of the successive months until the 12th month. In other words, Haman had lots cast, because the reason why they do it back then, because they wanted to find, especially if you had plans, you wanted to make plans, you wanted to find the luckiest day, all right, the luckiest day that your plans would work. And that's what Haman did in this story. That's why he had lots cast, because he wanted the perfect day for his scheme to go through, and we'll see it as we go through the story. The name Esther is also a Persian name. It means star. The word star is used as to number the righteous of Yahweh. In Daniel 12:2, he says, "And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And they that be wise shall shine as brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever." And in Genesis 22:17, this is the scripture that we most familiar with. "That in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiply I will multiply thee, thy seed, as the stars of heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies." So the word, that name Esther, it means star. This story is one that we need to know. We need to know this story right here. It's a story of victory. It's a story of hope against all odds. It's a story of revival. And, you know, if you ever wondered about how's a way, what kind of way can I... celebrate this Purim. You know, what can I do? What is something that I can do? The best way to do this, to celebrate this, is to commit to reading the book of Esther. That's the best way to do it. Commit to reading the book of Esther, because I can tell you that there's messages in there that I've never seen before that we're going to look at tonight. I've never seen them. There's parallels in here I've never seen before. And that's why this book is so important. This book is very powerful. And this book is what a godly woman looks like in this book. It's what a godly woman looks like. This book is what a godly woman looks like. You know, if you think about time, the time that we're in, we don't have time to be living for the world anymore. At all. Whenever we look at Scripture and we see what's going on, we shouldn't have any more time for the world. None. Thank you. So what we're going to do, we're going to listen to the book of Esther, the whole book. We're going to listen to it. And this is something that we're going to do every year for Purim. We're going to listen to the whole book of Esther to start our services off. But whenever you think about revival, it takes being disconnected from the world. That's the only way we can have revival, because it starts with us. Nobody else. If whenever you hear the word revival, you're thinking about other people, you're thinking wrong. Because every example of revival in the Scripture, it starts with the believer. Because remember, you can't be revived if you haven't been vived. In other words, if you haven't been born again, you can't experience this. You have to be born again. Now, the residual effect of this is what reaches the unbelievers. You know, if you think about what happened yesterday at our giveaway, everybody that I talked to personally, every one of them, at some point, they were born again. Every one of them. They were born again, but they backslidden. They need revival in their life. You know who else needs revival? We need revival in our life. Because remember, this is why we're having this. It's for us. This is for us. We should draw a circle around us, because that's where revival starts. It starts with us as individuals, and then it flows out. And I view, we need to get this Megillah up. I view revival as our weapon, as believers. It's like the nuclear bomb. And the reason why I say the nuclear bomb, because it doesn't just affect where it hits. It hits here. As individuals, you put that, it hits there. But it also affects the people around you. When revival hits, it's like a nuclear weapon. Because it affects people for distances, for miles it affects them. And that's what we need. We need that in our life. We need that in our parish. That's what we need. Go ahead.
Now in the days of Ahasuerus, from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces, in those days when King Ahasuerus sat on his royal throne in Susa, the citadel, in the third year of his reign, he gave a feast for all his officials and servants. The army of Persia and Media and the nobles and governors of the provinces were before him, while he showed the riches of his royal glory and the splendor and pomp of his greatness for many days. 180 days. And when these days were completed, the king gave for all the people present in Susa, the citadel, both great and small, a feast lasting for 7 days in the court of the garden of the king's palace. There were white cotton curtains and violet hangings fastened with cords of fine linen and purple to silver rods and marble pillars, and also couches of gold and silver on a mosaic pavement of porphyry, marble, mother of pearl, and precious stones. Drinks were served in golden vessels, vessels of different kinds, and the royal wine was lavished according to the bounty of the king, and drinking was according to this edict: there is no compulsion. For the king had given orders to all the staff of his palace to do as each man desired. Queen Vashti also gave a feast for the women in the palace that belonged to King Ahasuerus. On the 7th day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded Mehuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, and Abagtha, Zethar and Carcass, the 7 eunuchs who served in the presence of King Ahasuerus, to bring Queen Vashti before the king with her royal crown, in order to show the peoples and the princes her beauty, for she was lovely to look at. But Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command delivered by the eunuchs. At this the king became enraged, and his anger burned within him. Then the king said to the wise men who knew the times, for this was the king's procedure toward all who were versed in law and judgment, the men next to him being Karshina, Shethar, Edmetha, Tarshish, Meres, Marcena, and Memucan, the 7 princes of Persia and Media, who saw the king's face and sat first in the kingdom. According to the law, what is to be done to Queen Vashti because she has not performed the command of King Ahasuerus delivered by the eunuchs? Then Memucan said in the presence of the king and the officials, not only against the king has Queen Vashti done wrong, but also against all the officials and all the peoples who are in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus. For the queen's behavior will be made known to all women, causing them to look at their husbands with contempt, since they will say, King Ahasuerus commanded Queen Vashti to be brought before him, and she did not come. This very day the noble women of Persia and Media, who have heard of the queen's behavior, will say the same to all the king's officials, and there will be contempt and wrath in plenty. If it please the king, let a royal order go out from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes, so that it may not be repealed, that Vashti is never again to come before King Ahasuerus. And let the king give her royal position to another who is better than she. So when the decree made by the king is proclaimed throughout all his kingdom, for it is vast, all women will give honor to their husbands, high and low alike. This advice pleased the king and the princes, and the king did as Memucan proposed. He sent letters to all the royal provinces, to every province in its own script, and to every people in its own language, that every man be master in his own household, and speak according to the language of his people. After these things, when the anger of King Ahasuerus had abated, he remembered Vashti and what she had done, and what had been decreed against her. Then the king's young men who attended him said, let beautiful young virgins be sought out for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom to gather all the beautiful young virgins to the harem in Susa the citadel under custody of Hegai the king's eunuch, who is in charge of the women. Let their cosmetics be given them, and let the young woman who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti. This pleased the king, and he did so. Now there was a Jew in Susa, the citadel, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, son of Shimei, son of Kish, a Benjaminite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem among the captives carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away. He was bringing up Hadassah, that is, Esther, the daughter of his uncle, for she had neither father nor mother. The young woman had a beautiful figure and was lovely to look at, and when her father and her mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter. So when the king's order and his edict were proclaimed, and when many young women were gathered in Susa the citadel in custody of Hegai, Esther also was taken into the king's palace and put in custody of Hegai, who had charge of the women. And the young woman pleased him and won his favor, and he quickly provided her with her cosmetics and her portion of food and with 7 chosen young women from the king's palace, and advanced her and her young women to the best place in the harem. Esther had not made known her people or kindred, for Mordecai had commanded her not to make it known. And every day Mordecai walked in front of the court of the harem to learn how Esther was and what was happening to her. Now when the turn came for each young woman to go into King Ahasuerus, after being 12 months under the regulations for the women, since this was the regular period of their beautifying, 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 months with spices and ointments for women, when the young woman went into the king in this way, she was given whatever she desired to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. In the evening she would go in, and in the morning she would return to the second harem, in custody of Sheashgaz, the king's eunuch who was in charge of the concubines. She would not go into the king again unless the king delighted in her and she was summoned by name. When the turn came for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his own daughter, to go into the king, she asked for nothing except what Haggai, the king's eunuch, who had charge of the women, advised. Now Esther was winning favor in the eyes of all who saw her. And when Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus, into his royal palace, in the 10th month, which is the month Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign, the king loved Esther more than all the women, and she won grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king gave a great feast for all his officials and servants. It was Esther's feast. He also granted a remission of taxes to the provinces and gave gifts with royal generosity. Now when the virgins were gathered together the second time, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. Esther had not made known her kindred or her people as Mordecai had commanded her, for Esther obeyed Mordecai just as when she was brought up by him. In those days, as Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthan and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs, who guarded the threshold, became angry and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. And this came to the knowledge of Mordecai, and he told it to Queen Esther. And Esther told the king in the name of Mordecai. When the affair was investigated and found to be so, the men were both hanged on the gallows. And it was recorded in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king. After these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman the Agagite, the son of Hammedatha, and advanced him and set his throne above all the officials who were with him. And all the king's servants who were at the king's gate bowed down and paid homage to Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai did not bow down or pay homage. Then the king's servants who were at the king's gate said to Mordecai, "Why do you transgress the king's command?" And when they spoke to him day after day, and he would not listen to them, they told Haman, in order to see whether Mordecai's words would stand, for he had told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow down or pay homage to him, Haman was filled with fury. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone. So as they had made known to him the people of Mordecai, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews, the people of Mordecai, throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus. In the 1st month, which is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, they cast Pur, that is, they cast lots, before Haman day after day. And they cast it month after month, till the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. Then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, "There is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from those of every other people, and they do not keep the king's laws, so that it is not to the king's profit to tolerate them. If it please the king, let it be decreed that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who have charge of the king's business, that they may put it into the king's treasuries." So the king took his signet ring from his hand and gave it to Haman the Agagite, the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of the Jews. And the king said to Haman, "The money is given to you, the people also, to do with them as it seems good to you." Then the king's scribes were summoned on the 13th day of the 1st month, and an edict, according to all that Haman commanded, was written to the king's satraps and to the governors over all the provinces and to the officials of all the peoples, to every province in its own script and every people in its own language. It was written in the name of King Ahasuerus and sealed with the king's signet ring. Letters were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces with instruction to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all Jews, young and old, women and children, in one day, the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to plunder their goods. A copy of the document was to be issued as a decree in every province by proclamation to all the peoples to be ready for that day. The couriers went out hurriedly by order of the king, and the decree was issued in Susa the citadel. And the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Susa was thrown into confusion. When Mordecai learned all that had been done, Mordecai tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the midst of the city, and he cried out with a loud and bitter cry. He went up to the entrance of the king's gate, for no one was allowed to enter the king's gate clothed in sackcloth. And in every province, wherever the king's command and his decree reached, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting and weeping and lamenting. And many of them lay in sackcloth and ashes. When Esther's young women and her eunuchs came and told her, the queen was deeply distressed. She sent garments to clothe Mordecai, so that he might take off his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. Then Esther called for Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs who had been appointed to attend her, and ordered him to go to Mordecai to learn what this was and why it was. Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate, and Mordecai told him all that had happened to him, and the exact sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. Mordecai also gave him a copy of the written decree issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show it to Esther and explain it to her and command her to go to the king to beg his favor and plead with him on behalf of her people. And Hathach went and told Esther what Mordecai had said. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and commanded him to go to Mordecai and say, "All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there is but one law, to be put to death, except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter so that he may live. But as for me, I have not been called to come in to the king these 30 days. And they told Mordecai what Esther had said. Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, "Do not think to yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, "Go, gather all the Jews to be found in Susa, and hold a fast on my behalf, and do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my young women will also fast as you do. Then I will go to the king, though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." Mordecai then went away and did everything as Esther had ordered him. On the third day, Esther put on her robes while the king was sitting on his royal throne inside the throne room opposite the entrance to the palace. And when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court, she won favor in his sight, and he held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Then Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. And the king said to her, "What is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? It shall be given you, even to the half of my kingdom." And Esther said, "If it please the king, let the king and Haman come today to a feast that I have prepared for the king." Then the king said, "Bring Haman quickly, so that we may do as Esther has asked." So the king and Haman came to the feast that Esther had prepared. And as they were drinking wine after the feast, the king said to Esther, "What is your wish? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Even to the half of my kingdom it shall be fulfilled." Then Esther answered, "My wish and my request is, if I have found favor in the sight of the king, And if it please the king to grant my wish and fulfill my request, let the king and Haman come to the feast that I will prepare for them, and tomorrow I will do as the king has said." And Haman went out that day joyful and glad of heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he neither rose nor trembled before him, he was filled with wrath against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home, and he sent and brought his friends and his wife Zeresh. And Haman recounted to them the splendor of his riches, the number of his sons, all the promotions with which the king had honored him, and how he had advanced him above the officials and the servants of the king. Then Haman said, "Even Queen Esther let no one but me come with the king to the feast she prepared, and tomorrow also I am invited by her together with the king. Yet all this is worth nothing to me, so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate." Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, "Let a gallows 50 cubits high be made, and in the morning tell the king to have Mordecai hanged upon it. Then go joyfully with the king to the feast." This idea pleased Haman, and he had the gallows made. On that night the king could not sleep, and he gave orders to bring the book of memorable deeds, the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. And it was found written how Mordecai had told about Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs, who guarded the threshold, and who had sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. And the king said, "What honor or distinction has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?" The king's young men who attended him said, "Nothing has been done for him." And the king said, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to speak to the king about having Mordecai hanged on the gallows that he had prepared for him. And the king's young men told him, "Haman is there, standing in the court." And the king said, "Let him come in." So Haman came in, and the king said to him, "What should be done to the man whom the king delights to honor?" And Haman said to himself, "Whom would the king delight to honor more than me?" And Haman said to the king, "For the man whom the king delights to honor, let royal robes be brought, which the king has worn, and the horse that the king has ridden, and on whose head a royal crown is set. And let the robes and the horse be handed over to one of the king's most noble officials. Let them dress the man whom the king delights to honor, and let them lead him on the horse through the square of the city, proclaiming before him, 'Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor.'" Then the king said to Haman, "Hurry, take the robes and the horse, as you have said, and do so to Mordecai the Jew, who sits at the king's gate. Leave out nothing that you have mentioned." So Haman took the robes and the horse, and he dressed Mordecai and led him through the square of the city, proclaiming before him, "Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor." Then Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman hurried to his house, mourning and with his head covered. And Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that had happened to him. Then his wise men and his wife Zeresh said to him, "If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of the Jewish people, you will not overcome him, but will surely fall before him." While they were yet talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hurried to bring Haman to the feast that Esther had prepared. So the king and Haman went in to feast with Queen Esther. And on the second day, as they were drinking wine after the feast, the king again said to Esther, "What is your wish, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Even to the half of my kingdom it shall be fulfilled." Then Queen Esther answered, "If I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be granted me for my wish, and my people for my request. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. If we had been sold merely as slaves, men and women, I would have been silent, for our affliction is not to be compared with the loss to the king." Then King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther, "Who is he and where is he who has dared to do this?" And Esther said, a foe and enemy, this wicked Haman. Then Haman was terrified before the king and the queen. And the king arose in his wrath from the wine drinking and went into the palace garden. But Haman stayed to beg for his life from Queen Esther, for he saw that harm was determined against him by the king. And the king returned from the palace garden to the place where they were drinking wine, as Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was. And the king said, "Will he even assault the queen in my presence in my own house?" As the word left the mouth of the king, they covered Haman's face. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs in attendance on the king, said, "Moreover, the gallows that Haman has prepared for Mordecai, whose word saved the king, is standing at Haman's house, 50 cubits high." And the king said, "Hang him on that." So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then the wrath of the king abated. On that day, King Ahasuerus gave to Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was to her. And the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. Then Esther spoke again to the king. She fell at his feet and wept and pleaded with him to avert the evil plan of Haman the Agagite and the plot that he had devised against the Jews. When the king held out the golden scepter to Esther, Esther rose and stood before the king, and she said, "If it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and if the thing seems right before the king, and I am pleasing in his eyes, let an order be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman the Agagite, the son of Hammedatha, which he wrote to destroy the Jews who are in all the provinces of the king. For how can I bear to see the calamity that is coming to my people? Or how can I bear to see the destruction of my kindred?" Then King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther and to Mordecai the Jew, "Behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and they have hanged him on the gallows because he intended to lay hands on the Jews. But you may write as you please with regard to the Jews, in the name of the king, and seal it with the king's ring. For an edict written in the name of the king and sealed with the king's ring cannot be revoked." The king's scribes were summoned at that time in the third month, which is the month of Sivan, on the 23rd day. And an edict was written according to all that Mordecai commanded concerning the Jews, to the satraps and the governors and the officials of the provinces from India to Ethiopia, 127 provinces, to each province in its own script and to each people in its own language, and also to the Jews in their script and their language. And he wrote in the name of King Ahasuerus and sealed it with the king's signet ring. Then he sent the letters by mounted couriers riding on swift horses that were used in the king's service, bred from the royal stud, saying that the king allowed the Jews who were in every city to gather and defend their lives, to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate any armed force of any people or province that might attack them, children and women included, and to plunder their goods, on one day throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. A copy of what was written was to be issued as a decree in every province, being publicly displayed to all peoples, and the Jews were to be ready on that day to take vengeance on their enemies. So the couriers, mounted on their swift horses that were used in the king's service, rode out hurriedly, urged by the king's command, and the decree was issued in Susa, the citadel. Then Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal robes of blue and white, with a great golden crown and a robe of fine linen and purple, and the city of Susa shouted and rejoiced. The Jews had light and gladness and joy and honor. And in every province and in every city, wherever the king's command and his edict reached, there was gladness and joy among the Jews, a feast and a holiday. And many from the peoples of the country declared themselves Jews, for fear of the Jews had fallen on them. Now in the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, on the 13th day of the same, when the king's command and edict were about to be carried out, on the very day when the enemies of the Jews hoped to gain the mastery over them, the reverse occurred. The Jews gained mastery over those who hated them. The Jews gathered in their cities throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus to lay hands on those who sought their harm. And no one could stand against them, for the fear of them had fallen on all peoples. All the officials of the provinces, and the satraps, and the governors, and the royal agents also helped the Jews, for the fear of Mordecai had fallen on them. For Mordecai was great in the king's house, and his fame spread throughout all the provinces, for the man Mordecai grew more and more powerful. The Jews struck all their enemies with the sword, killing and destroying them, and did as they pleased to those who hated them. In Susa, the citadel itself, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men, and also killed Parshandatha and Dalphon, and Aspatha and Paretha, and Adalia and Aradatha, and Parmashta and Arasai and Aradai, and Visatha, the 10 sons of Haman the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of the Jews. But they laid no hand on the plunder. That very day the number of those killed in Susa the citadel was reported to the king. And the king said to Queen Esther, "In Susa the citadel the Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men, and also the 10 sons of Haman. What then have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now what is your wish? It shall be granted you. And what further is your request? It shall be fulfilled." And Esther said, "If it please the king, let the Jews who are in Susa be allowed tomorrow also to do according to this day's edict, and let the 10 sons of Haman be hanged on the gallows." So the king commanded this to be done. A decree was issued in Susa, and the 10 sons of Haman were hanged. The Jews who were in Susa gathered also on the 14th day of the month of Adar, and they killed 300 men in Susa, but they laid no hands on the plunder. Now the rest of the Jews who were in the king's provinces also gathered to defend their lives and got relief from their enemies, and killed 75,000 of those who hated them, but they laid no hands on the plunder. This was on the 13th day of the month of Adar, and on the 14th day they rested and made that a day of feasting and gladness. But the Jews who were in Susa gathered on the 13th day and on the 14th, and rested on the 15th day, making that a day of feasting and gladness. Therefore the Jews of the villages who live in the rural towns hold the 14th day of the month of Adar as a day for gladness and feasting, as a holiday, and as a day on which they send gifts of food to one another. And Mordecai recorded these things and sent letters to all the Jews who were in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, both near and far, obliging them to keep the 14th day of the month of Adar and also the 15th day of the same, year by year, as the days on which the Jews got relief from their enemies, and as the month that had been turned for them from sorrow into gladness, and from mourning into a holiday, that they should make them days of feasting and gladness, days for sending gifts of food to one another, and gifts to the poor. So the Jews accepted what they had started to do, and what Mordecai had written to them. For Haman the Agagite, the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of all the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to destroy them, and had cast pur, that is, cast lots, to crush and to destroy them. But when it came before the king, he gave orders in writing that his evil plan that he had devised against the Jews should return on his own head, and that he and his sons should be hanged on the gallows. Therefore they called these days Purim, after the term pur. Therefore, because of all that was written in this letter, and of what they had faced in this matter, and of what had happened to them, the Jews firmly obligated themselves and their offspring and all who joined them, that without fail they would keep these 2 days according to what was written, and at the time appointed every year, that these days should be remembered and kept throughout every generation, in every clan, province, and city, and that these days of Purim should never fall into disuse among the Jews, nor should the commemoration of these days cease among their descendants. Then Queen Esther, the daughter of Abihail, and Mordecai the Jew gave full written authority, confirming this second letter about Purim. Letters were sent to all the Jews, to the 127 provinces of the kingdom of Ahasuerus, in words of peace and truth, that these days of Purim should be observed at their appointed seasons, as Mordecai the Jew and Queen Esther obligated them, and as they had obligated themselves and their offspring with regard to their fasts and their lamenting. The command of Esther confirmed these practices of Purim, and it was recorded in writing. King Ahasuerus imposed tax on the land and on the coastlands of the sea, and all the acts of his power and might, and the full account of the high honor of Mordecai to which the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia? For Mordecai the Jew was second in rank to King Ahasuerus, and he was great among the Jews and popular with the multitude of his brothers, for he sought the welfare of his people and spoke peace to all his people.
But, I mean, we used to that now. Since we've been doing the Torah portion the last 3 or 4 years, listening to that, so wasn't too bad. Almost fell asleep one time. And only had one piece of cake. One too many. You know, today I came to grips with, whenever I speak, I'm always going to be able to look back and see some kind of blooper, you know. Because I don't know about everybody else, but whenever I get done speaking, I go home and I pick it till ain't nothing left to it. But, you know, the reason why I do is because I know this is my calling. And everybody in here has a calling. Everybody. And you may not feel like you're the best at it. I know there's a lot more people better than me at this. But it doesn't excuse the fact that this is what I've been called to do. It doesn't give me an excuse. This is what I've been called to do. And I'm not the best at it, but you know something? I'm okay with it. We should be okay with it. He didn't say be the best at it. He said you do it. You do it. And he's going to take care of the rest. And that's why I do it. Because look, this is nerve-wracking for me. It is. But once I get up here and I start speaking, that's where the Father will step in. Because we you know, whenever I'm coming up here, this is what I tell him. I'm yours, Father. And if you don't tell me what to say, I'm going to stand behind that pulpit and look like an idiot because I'm not saying anything. It was not long after I had my eye surgery. That was one of the toughest teachings I did. Because I was outside of my element because I was doing things I've never done before. Number one, I never spoke without glasses on. It was my first time. And then I was doing a slideshow. Way out of my element. I'm like, man. Because, you know, I'm used to going through it. I'm not used to everybody seeing everything with me. You know, I flip through it and I read it as I go. But anyway, I had a tough time doing it. But you know something? I could have used that as an excuse and say, you know something? I'm not doing it. Because I wanted to, trust me. But you know something? I can't do that. All the things that the Father did for me, whenever I was at my lowest low, he said that he found me. And he didn't just find me, but he got me out of the garbage, the corruption. He got me out of it. I owe it to him to do what he's called me to do. I owe it to him. I don't even know where that came from. But definitely wasn't in my notes. We're going to start out with Psalms 85:6. And he says, will you not revive us again that your people may rejoice in you? Will you not revive us again that your people may rejoice in you? Whenever I found out we was doing this, this is what my prayer was. Because I needed revival. I needed revival in my life. And I knew it. And you know, we have all of these different holiday feast days that we celebrate. This is one that's not commanded by God, but Mordecai did command the Jews to do it. There's a reason why he did it. And there's a reason why the Father has us do these feast days. It's because we forget. We forget. And Mordecai said, you do it that way you don't forget. Every year you do it so you don't forget to deliver the great deliverance that God brought you through. You don't forget. And it's the same thing with the feast days. They all lead to something. They all lead to us spending eternity with Yeshua and the Father. That's what they lead to. Each one of them. And the same thing with this right here is actually a full picture of what's gonna of all the other feast days. It's the full picture. You know, we just went through our Torah portion. This one here was last week, and it talked about the temple and how, you know, the temple, whenever God had the temple built, everything was precise. They had to use certain, they couldn't just put anything in the temple, not just anything. And that reminds me of revival, because I'm going to tell you when revival comes, when a temple is cleaned out and put in order. This temple, that's when revival comes. Whenever we clean it out and put everything in order like it should be, like God intended it to be, that's when revival comes. And that's what that Torah portion reminded me of. All of this stuff goes together. You can't make this stuff up. You can't. You can try all you want. You can't make it up. It's all in there. And it all has a purpose. We must fully get right with Yahweh. That's revival. Church or location has nothing to do with revival. It does not require a crowd of hundreds or thousands. The reason why I'm talking about revival is because, number one, tonight's the first night, but this story is about revival. It's about revival. And one thing we have to remember is that revival is not initiated by God. It's not initiated by Him. God doesn't need revival. We need revival. Therefore, we need to initiate revival. It's up to us. It starts with people who recognize that their relationship with the Father is not where it needs to be, so they begin to repent and cry out to Yahweh. We need to be broken before Yahweh. A broken heart desires righteousness and holiness, and that's why we have to be, that's why we have to cry out to Him for righteousness and holiness, because a broken heart desires that. That's what we desire. Every day should be revival. Think about this. Every day should be revival. But over time, we allow things to be more important to us in our relationship with Him, or we stop the process that He has us going through. Because the process hurts. It hurts. It doesn't feel good. But we can't stop. We cannot stop. There's no such thing as stop. Because if you stop, that means you're going backwards. That's why we should never stop the process. We should keep going. No matter how hard it gets, how it looks, we should never stop. Look at what Esther was faced with. And she didn't stop. And Mordecai told her. He let her know, don't think you safe because you're in the king's palace. You know, we think we're safe because we come to church sometimes. This is not safe here. Safe is the relationship with the Father, obeying His commands and His laws, and that's exactly what Queen Esther did. She obeyed godly counsel whenever Mordecai warned her. She obeyed it, and she listened. But sometimes we don't like to hear it from other folks. I'm sure she didn't. It doesn't excuse the fact that we still have to obey. Suck it up and obey. And I'm not trying to be insensitive or anything, but I can tell you there's an adversary out there, and that fella's out there to get us. He's not playing around. He's not playing. He's out there to get us. He was right there with next to Esther. The whole time he was right there next to her. You know, when you go through the story, there's, and not just this one, I mean all the stories in the Bible, there's markers and there's flags that come up while we're reading it, especially since we've been doing the Torah portion. You know, we become very familiar with the Torah. And so whenever you read, flags will come up. And them flags have scriptures attached to them that you remember. It's like, man, I remember reading this. So you start connecting the dots. Well, it's the same thing with the story of Esther. Same thing. And we're going to see that. And what the flags and markers do is telling us that there's more than meets the eye here. There's more to it. And that's whenever we have to lock in to the scripture and to the Father. That way we can understand these things, what he's trying to show us in the scripture. Because look, this stuff, you're not getting it just reading the Bible. You get it from revelation with the Father. That's where you get it. Because it's not on the surface. You got to dig deep. You got to dig deep for this stuff. And that's what I encourage everybody to do. Whenever you sense something, whenever that marker comes up, you stay there. Camp out there. Camp out there and look at it and study it and see what the Father's trying to tell you. Because what he's trying to tell you, he might be using you as a vessel to tell somebody else. And we have to be careful. Look at Esther, how many people she affected. All the Jews. She affected them. All right, here we go. We got to cover three chapters. But I'm pretty quick at this, man. If y'all was here last week... All right, Esther 1:1. Now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus, this Ahasuerus, which reigned from India even unto Ethiopia, over 177 provinces. So Persia, and at this time Persia was a superpower. They conquered the city of Babylon. This king ruled over 127 provinces. So this king was awesome. And the kingdom that he reigned over was incredible. It was incredible. All right. See? We already had verse 8. And the drinking... All right, I got to fill in a blank here. Almost didn't. So the king has a banquet. And it's a seven-day, not a banquet, a feast. It was a seven-day feast. And so he invites all of his top guys, the seven of them, all of his top guys to come there. And he invited other people too. And these seven guys, they were, let me see what they called them here. So anyway, these top guys were, they had access to the king that nobody else had access to. So just keep that in mind as we go. So they had this feast. It's day 7. Okay, and the drinking was according to the law. None did compel, for so the king had appointed to all the officers of the house that they should do according to every man's pleasure. In other words, the king was very kind and giving. That's what he's saying here. I know it didn't sound like it, but that's what he... But the king's very, very kind and giving. Verse 10. On the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded Memuhin. I did know. I've been practicing these names you wouldn't believe. Now all of a sudden I'm drawing a blank. All right, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, and Abagatha, Bagda, Zethar, and Carcass. I knew that one, Carcass. Yeah. The seven chamberlains that served in the presence of Ahasuerus, the king, to bring Vashti, the queen, before the king with the crown royal to show the people and the princes her beauty, for she was fair to look on. So on the seventh day of the festival, he sent his servants to get his bride. That's his bride. He sent them to proclaim her as queen, to proclaim her as his bride. What does Yah want to do? What does Yahweh want to do? He wants to proclaim us as Yeshua's bride. That's what he wants. All right, moving on to verse 12. But the queen Vashti refused to come at the king's commandment by his chamberlains. Therefore, the king was very wroth, and his anger burned in him. You know, whenever I first read this story sound very familiar. And whenever I read this, and there's some now, it may seem very familiar. But this story is in Matthew 22:1. You know, I was telling Pastor Josh today, you know, whenever any teaching that I put together, it's hard to get away from the words of Yeshua, because Yeshua covers all of this stuff. Everything in the Torah, he covers at some point and somehow. He covers it because, remember, that's what he was taught from. He was taught from the Torah. So that's where he pulls his teachings from, and that's why it's so important that we're going through the words of Jesus again. And we're going to go through some tonight. And we're going to get back to what happened with Queen Vashti here. But let's look at Matthew 22:1. And Yeshua answered and spake unto them again by parables and said, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a certain king which made a marriage for his son. And he sent forth his servants to call them that were bidden to the wedding, and they would not come. Again, he sent forth other servants, saying, tell them which are bidden, behold, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and my fatlings are killed, and all things are ready. Come unto the marriage. But they made light of it and went their ways, one to his farm, another to his merchandise. And the remnant took his servants and entreated them spitefully, and slew them. But when the king heard of, he was wroth. He was angry. He was upset. And he sent forth his armies, and destroyed those murderers and burned up their city. So in this story, in Matthew, this parable Yeshua is telling, the king sent his servants, but they were not willing to come. King Ahasuerus sent his servants, but she was not willing to come. This is one of the parallels that we're looking at. The king was furious. King Ahasuerus was furious. King Ahasuerus is representative of Yahweh. That's what he represents in his story. Now, getting back to Vashti. So Vashti represents the rebellious of Yah. And again, we're going to get more into this a little further down. She represents, Vashti, Queen Vashti represents the rebellious of Yahweh. the folks who are rebelling against him. They backslidden, folks who still go to church but are drifting away from Yahweh. That's what Vashti represents. And Queen Esther represents the righteous. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. Verse 15. What shall we do unto the queen Vashti according to the law, because she had not performed the commandment of the king Ahasuerus by the chamberlains? And Memucan, I got it, answered the king and the princes, Vashti the queen had not done wrong to the king only, but also to the princes and to all the people that are in the provinces of King Ahasuerus. So what shall we do to the queen according to the law? Now, Memucan is one of the princes and one with special access to the king. So that's why he spoke up. Go down to verse 17. For this deed of the queen shall come abroad unto all women, so that they shall despise their husbands in their eyes, when it shall be reported. The king Ahasuerus commanded Vashti the queen to be brought in before him, but she came not. So Memucan recognizes something here. He recognizes that everybody in the kingdom is going to find out what the queen did. Every lady. And I'm not bashing the ladies at all. And you'll see once we go further down. But he sees what can happen with the other ladies, that they can start disrespecting their husband because of what the queen did to the king. And think about it. Because this is not gender restricted. I mean, I remember times where I was on a job, and I'm just using that for example. I'm not even getting around a marriage deal here. I'm staying away. But a job, you know, you see somebody get away with something, what first thing come to your mind? Well, if he got away with that, I wonder what I can get away with. You know, we shouldn't think that way, but, you know, there's times where I'm pretty sure we all thought that. Well, Memucan, that's what he thought about. He thought about the ladies, and he thought about the kingdom. So it's going to spread to all the women throughout the kingdom, and that they would begin to disrespect their husbands. And this is a lesson from Torah and from Yeshua, because that's where he got those lessons from. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. And he knew this principle. But here's the thing, ladies. Women have great power to influence. Great power. And he knew this. Your words can be destructive, or your words could give life. One of the two. They can be destructive, or they can give life. The words that you speak and the things that you do can cause households to fall and friendships to fail. Think about it. They can do that. That's why it's important. And this is why Paul put it in Scripture that the older women should teach the young. That's why he puts it. The older women should teach the younger women how to be women. It's important. Very important. And again, this is not gender restricted. It's for the men too. The things we say and the things we do, they affect other people. And we see it in his story. I mean, this is a prime example of that. Queen Esther sucked it up. Say, you know something? I'm going to do it. You know why? Because it's not about me. Let me tell you what's a revival killer. It's pride. It's a revival killer because it's all about you. And I can tell you, God can't work with that. You got to put you on the side and open your heart to the Father and let him do the work. Because we can't do it. Ain't a person in this room believes that you can do it. Because we know. Because we tried, right? I've tried many a times. I've even tried to get people saved. We can't do it. You try to cram the whole Bible down their throat. I've done that before. The guy walked away choking. And I prayed I didn't have to give him mouth to mouth. Said, Lord, bail me out. And he did. But we got, you know, we just have to be careful what we say and what we do, because we affect other people. That's why we had to get together yesterday, the giveaway. Because what we did affected our community. It had an impact on it. I believe that. It had an impact on it. All right, moving on to verse 19. Still in chapter 1. We're almost done with chapter 1. If it pleases the king, let there go a royal commandment from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes that it be not altered, that Vashti come no more before King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal state unto another that is better than she. And when the king's decree, which he shall make, shall be published throughout all his empire, all the wives shall give their husband honor, both to great and small. Mamukin knew that this would send a powerful message throughout the kingdom. He knew that it sent a powerful message. All right, going to verse 2, chapter 2, verse 3. And let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather together all the fair young virgins unto Shushan, the palace, to the house of the women, unto the custody of Haggai, the king's chamberlain, keeper of the women. And let their things for purification be given to them, and let the maiden which pleaseth the king be queen instead of Vashti, and the thing pleased the king, and he did so. So he searches for a replacement for Queen Vashti. He has all the beautiful young virgins come to the citadel of Susa, and the thing that stuck out here to me was, he said, it says that all the virgins came, the good and the bad. So he sent for the good and the bad, and it reminded me of this was one of them flags that popped up. It reminded me, because right away you're thinking, well, if the king sends for virgins, he's going to send the good ones, right? Because, I mean, you could be a bad person or a good person. Good lady, bad lady. But it reminded me of the 10 virgins. They had 5 that was wise and 5 that were foolish. They were still virgins, but they were foolish. Matthew 22, 8 through 10. Then said he to his servants, the wedding is ready, but they which are bidden were not worthy. Go therefore into the highways, and as many as ye shall find, bid to the marriage. So those servants went out into the highways and gathered together all as many as they found, both bad and good, and the wedding was furnished with guests. So here, and this is the same story, the same parable Yeshua that we covered earlier. But again, both the good and bad. And this is what reminded me of. It reminded me of the sheep and the goats. You know, that there'd be a separation. The wheat from the tares, there'd also be a separation there. Back to Esther, chapter 2, verse 4. And let the maiden which pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti. And the thing pleased the king, and he did so. And I just read that one. I have it there too. So the father is looking for a bride that pleases him. The father is looking for a bride that pleases him. In Deuteronomy 5:29, oh, that there were such an heart in them that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it might be well with them and with their children forever. And in John 14:15, he says that if you love me, keep my commandments. It's our hunger and thirsting is what pleases the Father. Whenever we hunger and thirst after him. And we should have a certain fear about disobeying our Father. I know our natural Father, we did. Whenever we were young, we had a certain fear. But we should have a fear whenever it comes to doing things that's not pleasing to our Father. This is what happened with Vashti. Vashti didn't have fear. Therefore, she didn't obey. She didn't fear the king. Because if she would have, she would have obeyed. She would have did what the king wanted her to do. Pride. All right, moving on to chapter 2, verse 8 through 9. Take a look at. So it came to pass when the king's commandment and his decree was heard, and when many maidens were gathered together unto Shushan the palace to the custody of Haggai, that Esther was brought also into the king's house to the custody of Haggai, keeper of the women, and the maiden pleased him. And she obtained kindness of him, and he speedily gave her her things for purification, with such things as belonged to her, and seven maidens. So, I mean, she's getting hooked up. This fella here is taking special care of her. But this is what happened in our personal walk with the Father, is if we just trust him. I mean, think about it. You know how many ladies that was brought to the palace? They don't have a number, but it said all of them. So I couldn't imagine that Esther wasn't having the thoughts like, yeah, the king's going to pick me, you know? Like, yeah, right. But she must have had the right attitude, because the Father is fixing her up. He's getting her ready for that king. And the maiden pleased him, and she obtained kindness of him, and he speedily gave her her things for purification, with such things as belonged to her, and seven maidens, which were meant to be given her out of the king's house. And he preferred her and her maidens unto the best place of the house of the women. I mean, she got the best place. Put in the best place. Now I wonder what she's thinking. Well, maybe this can really happen. Maybe it can happen. Maybe it can happen. Out of all the women that were brought in, Esther gained favor with the king's custodians. Out of all of them women, she did it. The father setting her up. He does the same thing to us, but how many times do we refuse to set up? And he knows what's best for us, but we refuse it. We try to buck against it. And what he does, he gives us word. He pulls on our shirt tail. Hey, trying to help you here. You don't see what's about to happen, but I see. I know I got it all planned out. I done worked out all the details. It's up to you. She was separated from the other women. She was separated from the other women. What does the Bible say about us? It says you're set apart. I've set you apart. I might not get through this, bro. Let me see. All right, so we're going to go down to, I got to skip some of this. Phil just showed me the number 5. I've never seen that number before. Anyway. So let's go down to 5. Now, not 5. What am I thinking? I got 5 in my head now. Chapter 2, verse 12. Now when every maid's turn was come to the king Ahasuerus. After that, she had been 12 months according to the manner of the women, for so were the days of their purifications accomplished, to wit, 6 months of all with all of myrrh, and 6 months with sweet odors, and with other things for the purifying of the women. Now think about this. So this is what I thought about. 12 months of purification. These Persian women must stink. They must really stink, right? 12 months of this. Perfume, myrrh. Like, man, these Persian women must stink. Come on, I ain't the honest one thought that now. Man. That's a long time soaking. So the king seen all the women. Now it was time to narrow it down. The only way you go before the king now is if he requests you by your name. So he's narrowing everything down. The king has to delight in her. The king has to call her by name. We know he requested to see Esther. Verse 15. Now when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her for his daughter, was come. So we know that, all right, he done seen some women. This is narrow, some, you know, he picked some out of the, and what the father does. Think about it. He done it in the Torah, and he does it now. He picks a people out of a people. He did the same thing with Queen Esther. Same thing. So now it's Esther's turn. He called her by name. And Esther obtained favor in his sight of all them that looked upon her. So Esther was taken unto the king Ahasuerus, into his royal, in the 10th month, which is the month to Beth, in the 7th year of his reign. So if you go down in a story, you keep going. Most of us know it, if not all of us. You know, she's crowned queen. She's crowned queen. And let me see here. So after all of this, Haman comes on a scene. And Haman's important to the story because he's a picture of Hasatan. Remember, Haman was there. He was watching all this stuff. And he has a plan. Hasatan has a plan too. Satan has a plan. So, the post went out, being hastened, and this is verse 15 in chapter 3. I got to go all the way down to 15. I thought I would got done with this easily, but. So the plan was, Haman's plan was to have, he didn't like Mordecai. Mordecai didn't bow to him. He had an issue with Mordecai. And he convinced the king to pass a decree for all the Jews to be killed. Now, all the Jews, that's Esther's people, because Esther's Jewish. That's Esther's people, and Haman has this plot in place to kill all the Jewish people. Again, verse 15. I had to go back there. The post went out, being hastened by the king's commandment, and the decree was given in Shushan, the palace, and the king and Haman sat down to drink. But the city of Shushan was perplexed. In other words, they was confused. They was confused about what the decree that just got put in their hand, that all the women, men, and children was going to be killed. Every one of them. So we're going to watch chapter 4 as it unfolds. And then I have a few other things to add.